The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, welcome back to the Green Street Hammers podcast for this, your international break update, part one. It is episode 38, as mentioned, and we have a three-man crew, myself, Adam, Jeremiah, and we have Lou back. Guys, how are we doing today? How is Colorado looking, Jeremiah?
Dude, we're good today. The snow is coming for tomorrow, but today's good.
Oh, that makes me cringe. It was a nice 17 degrees Celsius here today, sunny skies. Lewis, how is bloody old England?
Same as ever, really. Cold, miserable.
That sounds
like it's not helping. It's not helping that the international break has started.
Yeah,
which makes it even more miserable. So
that really does stymie all the fun we were having. But what kind of also rains on that parade is West Ham's recent performance against Crystal Palace, a eventual 2-1 loss to the Crosstown Eagles. Lewis, we'll start with you. West Ham scored the one goal in this match. They were up 1-0. What to you was the biggest issue with how the Hammers performed? A lot of people are slagging them off for effort in this match and not really being up for it. But what did you pinpoint as the weakness for West Ham?
I didn't personally see a problem with in terms of lack of motivation or effort or that kind of thing. I think my main gripe was Palace defended very deep and we just didn't have the answers to break those blocks of four down most of the time. And our build-up play was pretty slow, bar two moments. One, where Noble split the defence in the first half and Yarmolenko set up Allaire to, it was a bit of a sitter, let's be honest. Then obviously the beautiful build up for the goal in the second half, but apart from those two moments we never really got in behind them, which was the problem really.
Jeremiah, if you had to pinpoint West Ham's best player in this match, who would you put that crown on?
That's tough. I think that's you could go with the obvious, I think, of saying like maybe Rice and Fredericks again, and you can make the argument that they've been the most consistently good players over the last couple of weeks. But I think Allaire played a pretty solid game. But like you said, Lewis, it was tough on the attack because they were playing back so far. And you even saw on Allaire's goal, you know, it took Fredericks coming down the right side and just getting a nice kind of just sliding the ball in there last minute. And then Allaire did the rest. But it was really tough all around. It wasn't horrific, but kind of, you know, it's going to sound crazy to say, but Roberto actually had a pretty solid game, and it kind of got stymied by the way that it ended up.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought that up. But first, Fredericks I thought was great. I would probably give him my man of the match for West Ham. And on that goal, there was a freeze frame going around Twitter today, and there was nine Palace players inside the box when Allaire scored. So it makes sense that the ball had to nutmeg one defender and then also nutmeg the keeper to go in. So, but that tends to be our game plan going forward here. Rice, on the other hand, he was all right in the midfield, but I gave him, I think, a 4 or 5 out of 10 on the player grades based off of him swinging his elbow, which is such a not a Rice move to make. He's usually the one who's boxing somebody out because he's positionally a step ahead, but that was a dumb one, and not to mention to do it in front of Kouyaté, who I'm pretty sure we could all agree doesn't have the most deft touch when it comes to being in the box or attacking play. But yes, I guess Roberto, he allowed 2 goals. You can't give him either one. One's a penalty, and one was a tap-in in front of the goal. A sitter, if you will, as Lou brought up there, about the same distance from the goal Sebastian Allaire was at when he blasted it at Gaeta's hand. But our fears were pushed aside when it comes to our backup keeper having a solid match. He really had a theatrical dive. But Lou, did you even think about it once the match was even on?
Think about Roberto?
Yeah.
Not really. Like you say, he did have a solid match, but looking back, I can't really recall any saves that he had to make, bar the theatrical dive that you mentioned.
Yeah, 4 shots on target for Palace in this one.
Yeah, I can't really remember the other one. But he obviously had a lot of not stick in the build-up, but there was a lot of worry around him due to his previous performances against Rochdale, obviously, where he didn't dive for any of the goals. Oof. And he was a bit shaky in the opening moments of the Bournemouth match, but that was to be expected. But he's obviously not as bad as a lot of people are making out. I think people are more concerned about the fact that we've missing an amazing goalkeeper in Fabianski, and they're kind of taking it out on Roberto.
Yeah, it's a mental like fear that I have that, you know, someone's going to pass it back to him and it's going to pop over his foot and go in the net. But if anything, he took a step in the right direction. It's funny when you say that when you let in half the shots you face that's actually happening. So I'm happy with the performance he put forward, but as a team, there was just a lack of urgency when it comes to the attack. In the final third, I thought West Ham looked very much not themselves. They're a team that's sort of supposed to take their chances, and this season we've been seeing them not taking their chances. The other match that comes to mind for me is the Watford game. Sorry, the Norwich game, when it could have been 5-0, and they just couldn't get the ball in the back of the net. And when you win, it's great, but when you don't, it becomes a glaring issue. Jeremiah, is there anything that comes to mind here when you think about the game in general? Is it a setback? Is it just a blip on the radar? Are we on to Everton, as Bill Belichick would say, for the Patriots? what can we take from this, or what should we leave behind from it?
Yeah, I think it's just a bump in the road, and I think you got to look on and look for what's next. I think, obviously, you saw a lot of players that were pretty upset. You know, Rice voiced his how angry he was over that and disappointed and ready to move on. So hopefully the rest of the team kind of takes that approach towards it. I think it's really just a bump in the road. It's going to happen. You know, it is the English Premier League, and the 20 teams that are in there are all fairly solid. You know, if you look at the whole list of the EFL, how many teams are in that. You know, this is the top 20 out of it, and they're pretty solid squads all around. So I think that it's disappointing because of the way that the table's shaping out. But, you know, with that loss, I don't think that it necessarily ruins our season, or it's not a lost season, so to speak.
Lewis, do you agree with that statement there?
Yeah, I mean, losses are a part of football, really, and they're a part of West Ham's identity. So, but you look at Crystal Palace's away form. I think that's 10 wins in the last 15 Premier League away games, which is not to be sniffed at, is it?
No, not a bad record for a Palace team.
No, it's not a bad record for anyone. But they've clearly got a very effective plan that seems to be working by those statistics, in 2/3 of the away games, they come out with a victory, and it wields success, and it they just did the same to us. I mean, I didn't think we say we played poorly, and I think we did, but I don't think Palace were any better. They just got the strokes of luck that you need to win tight encounters in the Premier League. Obviously, the handball we spoke about, and then the VAR decision that was an inch either way. Like, it's just one of them.
That's an actuality and a reality of Premier League football these days, I suppose. But in a very Belichickian manner, we are on to Everton. But we will address that in a different episode. In this one here, we're sort of focused on what's happened and how we're going to fill our time when it comes to the international break. We have a fair few players off on international break, but instead of talking about them, we're going to move on to something that we usually end the episode with. And again, it is what we're ending this episode with, but it's going to be more so in the second part of the episode rather than the third. So we'll jump in here, and guys, we have we're going to give ourselves 10 minutes of just hammering out these hammers pulls questions. First and foremost, though, there's one question that's on everyone's mind. Do you think that Colleen Rooney is right to accuse Rebecca Vardy? And do you think there's any way that they could repair that relationship?
I think it's
I'll let you go first.
Yeah, no. I think it's all hilarious, really. I mean, Twitter's just blowing up over this, and I'm just enjoying every minute of it, eating my popcorn.
Yeah, I think everyone's the same, really. Just take back and enjoy it while you can, while the beef is going on.
If you ever, go ahead.
Sorry, go on. I don't know if you remember the Samir Nasri one from a few years ago. the drip doctors one, where his wife was tweeting on his account about how he had an affair with the doctor and everything. This is up there with that, I think, in terms of Twitter iconic moments.
If you want something to do to fill some time, just find the original tweet with the screenshots and just scroll through those replies, because I mean, cancel Comedy Central. The best comedians in the world have GIFs and they're on Twitter right now on this battle going back and forth. Before we jump into Hammers Polls questions, we should touch on the signing at West Ham, and that signing is Aaron Cresswell to a 2-year extension. Our left backs are sorted for the foreseeable future, so everyone can stop asking about, what about that guy? Are we going to sign this person? Are we investing in a new left back? Jeremiah, pre-show, you brought up the fact that we can maybe invest in a youngster and let him come up in the academy, loan him out, blah, blah, blah. Love that idea. As for this, I am not entirely sold on it. I was all for Cresswell earning an international call-up over Danny Rose, who's done nothing. But yeah, 2 games isn't worthy of 2 years of contract time. Look at what we're dealing with Winston Reed right now. I'm not sold on it. Jeremiah, what do you think?
That's, you know, you asked us pre-episode, and we both kind of were like, it is what it is. You know, it's good to get it on there, and now we do have 2 left backs, not maybe world-class left backs, but both of them have international experience. Both of them have Premier League experience. If they're going to come around to it and they're going to start playing better, and you've seen both of them play fairly well this year, I think we can maybe move our attention, like you were saying, towards other positions and filling it out. And maybe why not bring in some kind of young left back? I don't really know who we have in the academy right now that would be anything to really talk about at left back, but bring somebody in, let them grow up a bit, and then, you know, 2 years down the road, we kind of look at that.
Lou, anything different on that? Are you happy? Are you a little bit head-scratching on the Cresswell extension?
Yeah, it's funny that I was literally head-scratching as you said that. I'm scared I've got cameras in my room, something that you can see. Or I've got my Skype video call on.
I promise I turned off the cameras in your room for this call. No worries.
I appreciate that. No, it seems a bit reactionary, doesn't it, after 2 or 3 good games from Cresswell. I mean, after, which was it, the Norwich game, I don't think anyone would have had Cresswell in that left-back spot for the rest of the season. But obviously Masuaku got his red card against Villa, and that is perhaps earned Cresswell a new contract. I think he's done well, but I would still have Masuaku in there long term, and I wouldn't have been too displeased with offloading Cresswell next summer. Like you say, could bring in through left back from the academy, maybe Ben Johnson. I know he's a right back, but he can play there. He did well last season against Man City. Mm-hmm. And have Masuaku in the squad still, but you know what, it is what it is again.
Yeah, it's curious to say the least. Yeah, reactionary I think is a good way to put it, but anyways, we'll jump into our Hammers Pulls questions here, and again we're gonna bang these out as quick as we can. Tony Coddy on Twitter asked a question, and it was retweeted by Hammers Pulse, so we'll start with this one, and it's very relevant. So, the question is, so, VAR has been in full swing in the Premier League for exactly 2 months now. Overall, do you think it's improved match decisions? Yes, better decisions. No, not helping. Lou, give me your thoughts.
Every time you ask me about VAR, I'm just caught off guard, because I never know what to say. I have about 10 different opinions, and they're all contrary to each other. Now, I would say, I guess, that overall, that the officials, well, not the officials, but we are getting accurate decisions in the match now in terms of offsides. I mean, the one the other day, it was as close as you like, and I think it was Son against Leicester, which was the same. But it's hard to argue with it, as it is technology. But in terms of, we've seen numerous like penalty calls and such this season, like Allaire on Norwich the other week, and various others in the Premier League, that VAR struggle to even overturned because they're not even looking at it because they don't want to overrule the referee and all the nonsense about obvious error and whatnot. I think they use it as and when, right? If they're going to use it, they need to use it consistently. Or don't use it at all. Just they're kind of like hopping in between at the minute.
Yeah. Anything different there for you, Jeremiah?
No, it's pretty much the same for me. I think, you know, I've said it before, and the kind of voice of reason with it is that, like, if they're going to use it for everything. You know, you look at American football and other sports where they use, you know, reviews and challenges, is, you know, they'll use it for everything. They're always watching to make sure that, you know, everything's being done right. And, you know, there was a shame that happened at the end of the match, but if you reverse that and say it doesn't get called or something like that, then it was like you said, Lou, it was 1 inch one way, 1 inch the other. And I mean, it ended up being probably the right call, and it is good to see. It's just different. I think it's going to just continue to take a while.
Yeah. My only thought is, I think once the ego gets put aside from the referees to basically, it's not showing each other up to, if you're changing a decision, you're basically confirming or like, you know, getting the right decision. There's no proving anyone wrong. It's just taking more time on a situation that actually has a match implication on it. So put, you know, we know you're all friends and you go to the pub afterwards and grab a beer, but like, that's okay. We just want that if the technology is there, that it's going to be used correctly. And I think everyone would agree with that. We know it's here. We know it's going to stay. Just basically make sure you're using it right. 74% of people said it's not helping, though. on to the next question here at Hammers Pulls. Which one of our injured players would have the biggest impact on the game we lost on Sunday and maybe even change the result? Lucas Fabianski, Mikel Antonio, Winston Reid, Zande Silva. Jeremiah, you go first.
I think for this match, because we said Roberto didn't do a terrible job and there wasn't a lot of shots on goal, I think it has to be Antonio. As good as Yarmolenko has been, and he, you know, he had a play into that goal. He had a nice setup pass to Fredrickson and then so on. I thought he did solid, but, you know, we are missing Antonio. Just this kind of craziness to go do literally anything. I mean, up and down the pitch, whether it's, you know, slide tackling somebody on defense and getting back up and running the other way. So I do think that that is missed. And out of those options, I would go with him.
Yeah, I'm in on Antonio, too. I think even if he gets in for 10 minutes, he's going to run the defense ragged for 10 minutes. So that's what I'd love to see. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I concur with both of you there. I think what Antonio would have done if he was introduced to that match, he would have given Allaire a bit of support and backup, because all too often when the ball was played to Allaire, he held it up, but he had no one to flick it onto or no one to pass it to. And I think Antonio would have given him a level of support where not it wouldn't have been too up front, but he would have had a little partner there. I think we saw it briefly when Antonio came on in the Watford match at Vicarage Road.
Yep.
And they seemed to team up and know where each other were and know each other's strengths. So I think Antonio would have definitely offered us something a little bit different.
The team almost transformed into like a 4-2-2 in the sense that Antonio stays committed more and Anderson roams a bit more. So he almost fills out more of a generalized attacking midfield role than a committed winger or wide player. I agree, Antonio, yeah, as I mentioned. 58% also agree with that. Fabianski, 39%. Zonde Silva with a 2% and Winston Reid with 1%. So...
who's voting for Winston Reid then?
Yeah, I don't know who would have picked that out as the issue there, or the Messiah to save us. All right, and another question here. We're going to go to it's a recent Hammers Polls video. You can check it out on their YouTube channel. I featured into it. Jeremiah, were you in this one as well?
I didn't make this one. No, I've been kind of failing him on this. I've got to get back to it.
Ian runs all that over there. He does a great job. He runs the account here. Would Allaire benefit from a striker partner? Lou, jump on in.
I think Allaire would on a personal level, but I'm not sure the team would as a whole, because I think to do that, we'd have to leave a man out of the midfield three, and then we're back to square one where we were at the beginning of last season when Pellegrini kept playing 4-4-2, where we were overly exposed. So we might potentially score more, but I think we'd start conceding by the bucket load again.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, I think, Lou, you said it perfectly. You know, he probably would personally. And to have somebody else up there and help him out, especially with this hold-up play. You saw how he was at Frankfurt, you know, with forgetting who he was with now. But, I mean, the amount of assists he had.
Jovic.
Yes, Jovic. He just played it perfectly. So he would. But then, yeah, who do you take out? And then does the midfield suffer from that? Because now there's less in there. Now, I will argue that the attacking hasn't been spectacular at times. So maybe there's a voice for that to maybe try it out. But like you said, then we're starting at square one. And then who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm the same deal with you guys there. Would he benefit from one? Sure. Would he benefit from taking a midfielder out of the game? No. So therefore, I don't think he would in this West Ham sense of the understanding there. But guys, we are going to call it there. We're going to pull the chute. I forgot about the Cresswell news, and that put us over the 20-minute mark. Lou and Jeremiah, thanks for hanging out for this quick and abbreviated episode. Appreciate you guys taking the time.
No problem. It's been fun.
Of course, man. And I would like to direct the fans to our Facebook page. I don't know if you're going to throw that in there or not. We do have a Facebook page. And check us out. It was West Ham Fans United, I believe. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, of course. It's not just going to be as easy as Green Street Hammers. It is West Ham Fans United. we've linked to it. Check us out on Twitter. The links are there. We'll retweet it again. I'll do that right now, actually. But yeah, we're doing more of a generalized news feed there of the best stuff that we've found on Facebook and Twitter and everything to keep everyone up to date, which includes the old Aaron Cresswell signing. So we are done here. We're off until next week, where we'll come back and we'll preview that Everton match as the Hammers go north to Merseyside into Lewes territory. You're up north, right?
Yeah, Everton is my mum's side of the family. They all support Everton, and my mum was born in Everton, actually, and I'll be going to that match, so I'm looking forward to it.
There you go. I'm sure you're happy that you're finally getting the one there this season too. So until then, we will leave you with that, and come on, you Irons.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.